session this afternoon. Representative Hanlon, I know, had a particular interest in Senate Bill 812, so I'd like to hold off just a few more minutes before we take that up. We also had posted for hearing and possible work session Senate Bill 490. And I guess this apparently was introduced at the request of the Department of Justice. I don't know. Do we have anybody here from the Department of Justice?
Yes.
We do. Okay. Members should find a copy of the Senate staff measure analysis. I don't know the day or what the vote was on this. Paul, do you have that? Do you recall?
My recollection is that it was either unanimous or everybody who was there was in favor of it.
Okay. Well, we can find that, I'm sure, without too much trouble. Why don't you go ahead, Paul?
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Paul Sundermeyer. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Oregon Department of Justice in the Financial Fraud Section. I'm primarily responsible for the enforcement of state and federal antitrust laws on behalf of the state of Oregon and, on occasion, its natural citizens. I urge you to support Senate Bill 490 for the purposes that are obvious on its face. It really addresses just a few situations that probably were not contemplated at the time that the original bill that it seeks to amend were passed, because there's been a substantial change in antitrust law since then. There is much more cooperation among investigators of antitrust violations in the state attorney's general offices today, and we cooperate to a great deal more than was done 10 years ago. The harm in a statute such as we have currently is that it prohibits me from sharing information that I might gather in a coordinated investigation with other states with the attorneys general in those states, or on occasion with people in the Federal Trade Commission or the United States Department of Justice. The bill is permissive in the sense that the attorney general would determine when it's in the best interest of Oregon to share the information. The other aspect of the bill relating to investigations is that it allows me to actually use the material that I gather in the course of an investigation, or whoever might be in our office, in the course of the investigation. I think that's a result that was not foreseen when the original statute was passed. Otherwise, it doesn't seem there would be much use to have the statute at all. But this does clarify that. And furthermore, finally, it allows the producer of the information, whatever company or entity might be subject to our subpoena power and investigative demand, to have these documents returned to them at the close of the case or at the close of the investigation if any of these documents have not been entered into the record of the court. And I'm willing to answer any questions you may have about Senate Bill 490.
Thanks, Paul. I don't know if you have any written comments. We'll be glad to receive them if you do. If not, are there any further questions from Mr. Sundermeyer? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Olson, it's my understanding that he had intended to make some inquiry with the appropriate bar section on Senate Bill 490. If you had an opportunity to do so, and can you state any position on behalf of the bar?
All I did was put the chairman of the antitrust section in touch with your staff, Tom Ballmer, and my understanding is that he had no objections to that proposal, but that information was from your office.
Okay, that appears consistent with the information in my file. Any further questions for Mr. Olson? Any further testimony on comments on 490? Okay. Before we go into work session on any of these bills, let's go ahead and take the testimony first. I think we can move 490 today unless there's some objections, but now that Representative Hanlon has joined us, I know we have a witness who's appearing especially to respond to some of the questions that came up on the first hearing on Senate Bill 812. Why don't we go ahead and ask, is it Mr. Johnson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you for your patience this afternoon.
Thank you. My name is Reese Johnson, and I'm testifying in favor of Bill 812. I'm a member of the Legislative Subcommittee of the Estate Planning Administration Section of the Bar, and I have distributed testimony explaining in the section-by-section analysis of the bill. This bill is a result of our subcommittee's action over a period of a year, and quite a bit of time went into it. The primary goal of the bill is to address the problem, two problems. One is problem of trust departments, and the other is problem of attorneys who have to take over the estates of a attorney who is a sole practitioner, technically, and takes over a box or two of wills, and can't find the owners of the will. Presently, under our rules, the requirement is that the attorney coming into custody of the will has to hold on to those wills, in effect, in perpetuity, if they cannot find the owners of the will. This would address that problem by permitting, under certain due process kind of rules, an attorney to destroy a will which is more than 30 years old, and in other circumstances, one that is 60 years old. It does not encourage, I think, the kind of problem that you talked about apparently in your first session. That is the practice which I consider unethical, and where attorneys encourage, if not suggest and imply, that they must hold the wills of the testator when the testator gives it to them. I don't think this bill would encourage that kind of thing, because any attorney who engages in that kind of practice would have no interest in destroying the will in any event. I think it is a problem. I think it's unethical and coercive where attorneys keep the wills and don't tell the client that they should keep them themselves, or that they had other opportunities to keep them. It's coercive when the client wants to change the will, and it's coercive on the personal representative, because the attorney frequently does not suggest that, or disabuse the PR of the myth that the personal representative must use the attorney to settle the estate who prepared the will. That is a concern of this committee. I would promise or be prepared to address this in separate legislation next session. I'm open to questions.
Okay, we have also, I believe, a copy of your prepared remarks.
That's correct.
Okay. Were there questions from Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon.
I had a chance to talk to Mr. Johnson, and I do appreciate Mr. Olson getting him down here and taking the time. And he and I discussed the matter, and we still differ. We understand each other, but we still differ. My position is, if one takes the original will into their custody, then they should be bound to hang on to that will however long, rather than destroy it. But I understand his position and his representations. It's just, Mr. Johnson, they didn't change my mind.
Understand.
Well, the bar's got a big new building. Maybe they've got storage space. Give them some fiduciary responsibility. Well, we're maybe a member too short of a work session on this issue.
No, three.
Representative Hanlon, are you prepared to support this bill today?
Mr. Chair, my position has not changed, and it was no last time.
Let me see if I can round the member up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon, were there any amendments that might be acceptable to the bar estate planning section that you had considered that might... Representative Hanlon, I don't have a practice in this area. Are
Mr.
there...
Chair, let me explain. A lawyer needn't keep ever an original will. It is a voluntary thing on their part whether they get it with full disclosure or not. If one chooses to do that, my personal opinion is that one has an obligation to retain that will.
Your And I understand Mr. Johnson says that there are solo practitioners, and I'm one, and so is he is. I understand that his father was, that had wills, and they are passed on from generation to generation even. But one makes the voluntary choice to keep the original document rather than advise the client to store that original document or do what the client wishes with it. And one, I must tell you, can always store the document in an entity that will be ongoing, or at least will have a successor. So,
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hamlin, have you had a chance to conclude your remarks?
Yeah, thanks.
Representative Dix.
I'll move Senate Bill 812 to the full committee with a new pass recommendation.
Representative Dix moves Senate Bill 812 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 No.
Votes aye. Motion's adopted. Okay, let's hear about 3348. Mr. Nass, this is everything the Judicial Department needs from us for the rest of the session, right? Almost.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, for giving us the opportunity to offer these amendments. For the record, my name is Jim Nass, Legal Counsel, Oregon Supreme Court, Court of Appeals. Do you have before you the dash one amendments to House Bill 3348?
Yes, I do. And Mr. Nass, as you probably are also aware, Subcommittee 3, if I'm correct, with St. Hanlon, this afternoon has previously taken action on House Bill 2196, is that correct?
Well, Mr. Nass is aware of that too, yes.
Okay, yes, fine. And I was going to point that out and mention that, therefore, in light of that action, Sections 7 and 8 of the proposed amendments ought not to be offered, and I would withdraw them at this time, because 7 and 8 would have incorporated the essential provisions of House Bill 2196 into House Bill 3348.
That's nice.
Because I was not aware at the time I drafted these on Sunday night that House Bill 2196 had been scheduled for hearing.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and proceed with your, I think we've got your printed testimony. Why don't you go ahead and maybe address the other issues, and you may want to take a moment, I don't know if it's necessary, just to speak to the issue of 2196, since we'll be coming up one way or the other.
I believe that the only amendment being offered that is of any controversial matter at all would be the amendments to lines 15 through 18. At the original bill on, at the original hearing on this bill, Stephen Pfeiffer, Assistant Attorney General, appeared and commented on certain provisions, and Mr. Pfeiffer and I subsequently discussed his concerns at some length, and we proposed some amendments to the bill and made those available to him. He responded, and this is the last version of the amendments that we have offered that I believe meet all of his concerns. I have made these amendments available to him yesterday morning. I have not been able to contact him to find out if he has any objections to them, but he has been given the opportunity to be aware of them.
Okay.
I think unless the committee has any questions, I'll simply end there.
You give that to Dick.
Mr. Gruber and I have gone through the bill, and there are a few other changes that we'd like to make in the language of it. unless you have any questions about any of the substantive part of it, I'd like to go through some of those amendments now.
Why don't you go ahead and go through those?
Yeah, on page 2 of the dash 1 amendments at line 3, after 138.680, insert on the same ground. Also on page 2 at line 25, delete 4 and insert alleging. And on the same line, delete non-criminal. Line 26, delete 4 and insert alleging. Line 27, delete 4 and insert alleging. I would like to comment at this point that this subsection 3 at the bottom of page 2 is based on the language of an existing statute, ORS 21.615. With these changes in the language, this language will differ somewhat from the language of 21.615. It is not our intention to change the meaning of it, simply to clean up the language. Mr. Gruber has just pointed out that there is one other change that ought to be made. In line, on page 2, line 26, after state, insert offense designated as a. On page 3 of the dash 1 amendments at line 10, delete at the trial level. And then, as I mentioned, on page 4, beginning at line 25, delete the entirety of sections 7 and 8, which would take us clear over to page 6. At line 20, delete section 9 and insert section 7. And then on page 8, in order to make some conforming amendments at line 8, delete 10 and insert 8. Delete lines 16 through 18. And at line 19, delete provisions of and insert amendments to. And then after ORS 19.050, insert by section 7 of this act. Lastly, at line 22, delete 11 and insert 9.
Okay. What have we done if we adopt all these amendments?
Okay. These are mostly nuts and bolts types of amendments that correct some technical kinds of problems that the courts
Mr.
have run
Chairman,
into.
Excuse me.
I just don't think it's adequate to have nuts and bolts and technical as substantive evidence that we're going to act on, especially in a bill of this import and this witness. That's woefully inadequate as far as I'm concerned.
With respect to what is section 1 of the bill and the amendments offered on page 1 of the dash 1 amendments, as I was going to add, this would not be, I would not consider this a nuts and bolts correction. It is the one what I would consider substantive change that the bill would have, and it would provide a means to not have a defendant utilize the post-conviction relief procedure to obtain a delayed appeal where the late filing of a notice of appeal in a criminal case is due to the fault of someone other than the defendant personally. And the most common situation that the court encounters is where the defendant's lawyer, through negligence or for some other reason, fails to get the notice of appeal filed in a timely fashion, and the fault is in no way attributable to the defendant personally. The other common situation is where the trial lawyer does not handle the appeal. The defendant expresses the desire to take an appeal, and the trial court, for some reason, is unable to get counsel appointed in time for the notice of appeal to be timely filed. Under existing law, the defendant can pursue post-conviction relief and, in those cases, get a delayed appeal. Under this bill, the defendant would avoid having to go through back to the trial court to get that relief and could come directly to the Court of Appeals. There are safeguards built in both from the state's point of view and from the defendant's point of view. And those, as I said, were worked out with Mr. Pfeiffer of the assistant of the Attorney General's office. Section 7 and 8 would have been a significant change in the law had we left them in, but since I'm not offering them at this time, I won't comment on them unless the committee wishes me to. I'm sorry, what will be Section 7, which begins at page 6, beginning at line 20, the amendments to ORS 19.050 might appear to be significant changes in the sense that it spells out the standards and procedures whereby a stay of a judgment can be gotten from the appellate court in cases not otherwise provided for by existing law. But this is in essence the standards and the practices being used by the court now.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hanlon.
Thank you. Mr. Nash, where did Section 7 and 8 come from?
Section 7 and 8 were the sections that Mr. Mountain offered with respect to House Bill 2196. Those were the amendments that he and I worked out during the interim between the January hearing on House Bill 2196 and the agreed-upon set of amendments that were offered in May of this year.
And who prepared the Dash 1 amendments?
Mr. Gruber prepared them based upon materials submitted by me.
By you, at your direction?
Yes.
Mr. Gruber, did you have some comments?
I prepared these at the direction of the legislator, and not directly at the request of Mr. Nass. I was authorized to work with Mr. Nass on the preparation of these, and we received them in draft form. Yes, sir.
Mr. Nass, at the time you asked that these be included through that legislator to legislative council, you were aware that those sections were also pending in another bill, weren't you?
Yes.
Why would you have them in two separate bills within the same committee?
At the time that I had offered them, I had understood that House Bill 2196 might not be scheduled for hearing. And this is, I would consider the provisions of House Bill 2196 to be more important than any of the other provisions that we are offering in House Bill 3348.
Further,
Mr. Chairman,
I
would suggest to the chairman that we, if that's the case,
Mr. Nast has already had these bills with a positive recommendation to the full committee. That is section 7. Section 8, am I correct, Council? And I really consider it inappropriate to be playing two sides of two different subcommittees against the middle on bills you think might not be heard. You've got an ethical obligation in a court to do differently. I think you have an ethical obligation in this building to do differently, Mr. Nast. So I just think it's a bunch of crap.
Laying that aside, is there further discussion on the merits of what has been left on the amendments of 3348? Were there any, Mr. Gruber, did you have anything to add in terms of the drafting or the...
Just wanted to
ask, as you understand, 2196 apparently was acted upon, and I believe that removes the need for Section 7 and 8 to be presented in these amendments.
Apparently so. As you know, in our office, at the edges of our respective responsibilities in the office, we get some overlap. And 2196 was worked on by Mr. Lundy. This bill was worked on by me, although the sections 7 and 8 in this particular draft was substantively identical. I just wanted to... Since we came in and because of the lack of time in getting this prepared, we did have those additional little adjustments that we just recited to the committee. I just wanted to emphasize that by doing things like, for example, taking out in page 3, line 10, at the trial level, we don't mean to change the meaning and suggest that this is at the appellate level. These were cleaning up the language kinds of things and trying to make it clearer rather than to change the meaning. And most of this is new language. Some of it does clean up a little bit existing ORS sections.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the proposed amendments to House Bill 3348-1 as further amended? Council, do you have those proposals that were reviewed, I think, with us today orally?
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Gruber.
Another thing I wanted to mention about the adjustments. On page 8, lines 10 to 21 are provisions providing for when, what circumstances certain of the amendments apply to in terms of their effectiveness. And there are also some similar provisions in the bill. Those, I think, we're going to have to redraft a little bit structurally. It won't change any of the substance, but I'd like the authority to do that because it will make it very difficult to file it.
Okay, I think any motion that the chair accepts would allow you the opportunity to make such recommendations in terms of editing or form and style as you would recommend, subject to our further review at the full committee level, and we'll make sure that we'll schedule this in 2196 so we're not stepping over ourselves or taking any action where the left hand maybe isn't fully advised on the premises with the right hand, which sometimes is difficult these days. Rep. St. Bond?
I just wanted to ask Mr. Nass, and I didn't have a chance to follow all the testimony, but does this in any way narrow the rights of the criminal defendant?
The only conceivable narrowing of the rights of the criminal defendant would be if under Section 1 of the bill the defendant chose to ask the Court of Appeals for leave to pursue an otherwise late appeal, and the court denied that motion without leave to pursue post-conviction relief, the person would forfeit the right to seek post-conviction relief on the same ground.
Thank you.
Okay, is there further discussion of the 3348-1 amendments as amended?
Mr. Chair,
Trustee Sam Hamlin.
I move to delete section 7 and 8.
Okay, Representative Hamlin moves to delete section 7 and 8, which deals with the previous amendments adopted or relates to issues previously addressed in action in another subcommittee on House Bill 2198. Any objection to that? If not, that motion's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, do I understand that also those other little adjustments we went through earlier are also part of that?
We'll make that part of the main motion on the amendment. Okay, is there a motion on the dash one amendments as amended?
I'll move them, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hamlin moves the dash one amendments as amended on the record noted by counsel. Any objection to the dash one amendments as amended? If not, those are adopted. We have a motion on the bill as amended.
I'll move it with the due pass to full committee.
Representative Hamlin moves House Bill 3348 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hey, if not, the clerk will call the roll on the motion on House Bill 3348.